usually don't expect as many people on a Wednesday night because there's don't expect as many visitors from other congregations. It looks like tonight we have just about as many as we've had the other nights. So thank you for being here and hope this lesson will be helpful to us. We're talking about serving God, different types of service. Tonight I want us to focus specifically on different temperaments and personalities that we have that can help us in different kinds of service. One of the most amazing things about Christianity is seeing how God can use everyone from different cultures, with different personalities, different outlooks, all for His benefit. Some of you have asked me about some of the congregations in New Jersey and New York City. One amazing thing you see there, of course, that's a cultural melting pot. But to see how people from so many different countries, so many different backgrounds, can be molded together and work together as one functioning unit. And that's the way it's been ever since the beginning. Jesus and the apostles, that's the example we sometimes refer to. You have 12 men, completely different. Some have called them a ragtag collection of fishermen, farmers, and small-town merchants. And what did Jesus do? He molded them together to work in the kingdom. Many of you may have heard this point made. Matthew, what did he do before he became a disciple? Tax collector, working for those hated Romans. Simon the Zealot. Those were armed bands of Jewish terrorists who killed as many Romans as they could. Can you imagine that combination? And then you have Peter, always speaking and without thinking. Then on the other hand, you have Thomas, who was probably took a rather dim view of Peter, cautious and analytical. And what do you have in the apostles? A group of men that after a few years it was said of them, and those they converted, they have turned the world upside down. Was it because of them? They were nothing. It was God working through them. And that's the way it is in just about every congregation. That's true of the congregation here at Eastside. Are we all the same? Different backgrounds, different temperaments, different personalities. And yet if we allow Christ's teaching to penetrate our lives, we can work together as one, and it's a beautiful thing when you see it functioning as we should. Tonight, I want to talk about four different personalities in the Bible. And we're going to talk about Paul, the decisive type of person, the driver. Some people say choleric. Some of the people we're going to mention tonight, people put different names to describe their temperaments. Don't get too hung up with that if you don't want to. We're going to talk about Peter, open, outgoing. We're going to talk about Moses, who we're going to call the analytical. And we're going to talk about Abraham. We're going to look at texts that describe them, talk about the fact that many of us are like them in many ways, and make some applications. And as we go through this, you may identify yourself primarily with one or the others. And most of us are that way. Most of us can identify with one of these four. Now, we're a mixture of all four, but often one kind of stands out. Or sometimes one, he has none of that. But what matters is that whatever temperament God has given us, that we use that. We allow Him to mold us to be the type of servants that we're talking about this evening. Well, let's start off with the Apostle Paul. Some call his type of a character a driver, decisive, or the fancy schmancy word is choleric. Others in the Bible that may have been like him, Pharaoh, determined, almost to the point of never turning back no matter what the consequences. If you want to look at a general description, they're confident. These are the everything is black and white type of people. They are blunt and sometimes can offend others by being that way. Now, they have some good qualities. They're determined. They're independent leaders. They're decisive. They're dynamic. But if you're like the Apostle Paul, and we'll see this from the scriptures we're going to analyze in a minute, you need to be careful with being tactless. A driver will just say what he thinks. Doesn't matter who he offends. Sometimes they have their agendas. And if someone is not fitting into that agenda, they can be inconsiderate about it. They can be proud. They can be inflexible. They can be closed-minded. These are the things that those who are like the Apostle Paul in his temperament need to be careful. Let's look at him. Let's turn to Acts chapter 8, and let's look at several texts that illustrate these qualities in the life of the Apostle Paul. Now, before he became a Christian, all these bad qualities of this temperament can be seen in the Apostle Paul. We see him at first, energetically persecuting faithful Christians. And Stephen, in the last part of chapter 7, stoned to death by the enemies of Christ. And who is holding the outer clothing of those people who did it? The Apostle Paul. And it's almost as if you would think when you saw someone stoned to death, if you can imagine the blood spattering, the bones cracking and breaking, that is going to stop anyone but the most hard-hearted type of person. Or at least will affect him in any way. Doesn't seem like it affected the Apostle Paul. Or I should say Saul of Tarsus here, because that's what he's known as here. Didn't affect Saul at all. Give him more. Give it to him. And look at Acts chapter 8 and verse 3. And so, as for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison. Can you imagine that? Not just picking up someone off the street, going to their house, dragging them away. Can you imagine the little children, Mommy, Daddy? Their cries for their parents. Did that affect Saul? Is that going to hold him back? Any compassion at all here? Just single-mindedness and attaining his objective, which was wiping out Christianity off the face of the earth. The cruelty of it all. He didn't care. This Jesus, as far as he was concerned, was a fraud. We're going to do whatever it takes to wipe it out. Look at chapter 9 in Acts, verses 1 and 2. Notice the language used to describe his attitude as he goes to Damascus. Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked letters from them to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if he found any who were of the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Breathing threats and murder. Doesn't matter, men or women, mothers, fathers. He's going to take care of them. But all of us know the story. Here in Acts 9, things just changed immediately. How did Christ deal with Saul of Tarsus? Calmly, softly. With people like Saul, you have to hit them hard. So you have the bright light shining out of heaven, the voice saying, "Why do you persecute me?" And the blindness that came over him. My old friend Curtis Pocus just slapped him up the side of the face. And symbolically, that's kind of what's going on here. I think sometimes that's the way to deal with the self-assured, confident people who are like Saul today. You can be more blunt with them than anyone else. Sometimes, here's someone who's not obeying the gospel, someone like him. You might just say, here's the text, Mark 16:16. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. Do you want to be saved or not? Now, you can talk that way to somebody like Saul, the size of our... You probably wouldn't be wanting to speak that way to others. Different types of people require different approaches. Jude 22 and 23. That's what that text teaches, I believe. Well, after Saul of Tarsus became a Christian, you see that those bad qualities that go with his temperament, the tactless, the inconsiderate, the closed-minded, you see them being modified by God as he works with him. And yet, the good aspects of it come to the forefront. Talk about a leader, the Apostle Paul. Talk about decisive. He never gave up. We're in Acts, turn to Acts 14. Can you imagine this scene? And we know the story. I think we read it so often. How it must have actually been. Sometimes we may just skip over that. But here's Paul in Lystra, preaching the gospel. In verses 19 and 20 of Acts 14, the Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there, and having persuaded the multitudes, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. They thought he was dead. They threw so many chunks of rocks at him. The lacerations, the blood, the bones. Is that going to stop him? Look at verse 20. However, when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and went into the city. And the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. The next day he departed with Barnabas for Derbe. What condition would his body have been in? You hate to think. He talked later on the marks that he bore on his body. Here is a decisive man who is never going to give up. And you think of 2 Corinthians chapter 11. All that he went through. How could a man do that? Of course, God was giving him the strength, but using that strong, decisive temperament that he had given him. But here's an interesting verse when you think of the Apostle Paul. Turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. This is something that does not go with it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, I'm sorry. This just doesn't go with the temperament. Paul, talking with the Thessalonians, reminding them of how he was when he was among them. How was Paul among the Thessalonians? Chapter 2, verse 7. But we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. This same man who held the clothes of those who stoned Stephen, who drugged Christians from their homes and bound them, gentle as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. What's happened? God has changed him. God has changed him. Using, yes, those good qualities that went with his temperament, but changing him from those bad. And really, this is the challenge for all of us, whichever temperament God has given us, to allow those good qualities to come forth and to shine while the weaknesses associated with them are controlled and dealt with carefully. And we're going to talk about that as we talk about the other individuals in our study today. So, what can those who are like Paul, who are decisive, who are drivers, what types of service can they be especially effective at? They're your leaders. I think sometimes some of the best song leaders I know, they lead. You know, sometimes I guess I'm a little bit this way. I get up and I feel a little intimidated and, well, we'll do the best. That's not your best song leaders. The decisive ones do the best. Organization. If you want something organized, a group of women or a group of men, get one of these decisive persons to do it. A lot of people will talk about it. We ought to do this. We ought to do that. Maybe one of these days we'll... These drivers, these who are like the Apostle Paul, will do it. That's what we need to keep in mind. And looking about those who want to serve the Lord, use them in that way. Well, let's talk about Peter. Peter is who we're going to call the influencer. If you want the big word, it's sanguine. Now, we're not saying that other types of people don't want to influence others. But this is the big desire of those who are like Peter. They want to be loved. And they want to be liked. And they're open. They're popular. They're the life of the party. They're always laughing, cutting up. I was in Crystal this morning. You know, Crystal, well, I won't give them for their free Wi-Fi. But anyway, checking my email, and some fellow I'd never seen in my life just comes hopping in, looks at me, says, "Look at that long cord you have going there. Boy, you need a long." "Yeah, well, my battery's a 5-year-old computer and all." Well, and the next thing I know, was in a big conversation. I'm going to Mobile and all that. I thought, yep, there's our Peter. There's our Sanguine. Never met a stranger in their lives. That's the way they are. Other things about, they're not shy. If you want to have an easy conversation, you know, we talk about our awkward conversational moments. I have a bunch of them. But these people almost seem like they never have them. It's just automatic, nice conversation, enthusiastic. And sometimes it looks just great at first when you meet someone like this, and yet, as with all the temperaments, our influencers have their weaknesses. They can be impulsive. There's a lady in New York, and this is her strength. She gets me tons of home Bible studies. She has so many friends. Many of my studies are with those she has gotten. But she's just so impulsive. Somebody said, "You can buy a house cheap in North Carolina." The next thing you know, she had that house bought. Unfortunately, one of these mortgages that was the adjustable, so now she's lost it. And how impulsive. That goes with it. And if you have this temperament, you'd better watch it. You can be unstable. And here's the big problem. Sometimes a desire for popularity makes you kind of want to avoid those convictions that might not be popular. Sometimes those with this temperament have to be careful not to be braggarts and exaggerate when they tell stories. Your best storytellers are usually in this class, but watch it. It may not be accurate, may be completely embellished. And of course, they want to be the center of attention. And if you know any flirts, they're probably got a good dose of this temperament. I have a book that says they have an enormous need to be loved and approved, and frequently will make any kind of compromise necessary to gain that approval. No temperament has a greater problem with lust. So it looks good, but there are problems. And this is what we see with the Apostle Peter. Before allowing Christ to transform him, Peter showed all the weaknesses that you see with this temperament. He was talkative. He talked more than any of the other disciples put together. And often, sometimes it was great what he said. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." What a great, fantastic declaration. But then he turns around and what does he say in the next minute? "No, no, it's not going to happen the way that you're saying when you go to Jerusalem." He said, "Get behind me, Satan." They speak without thinking. Sometimes it comes out just great. And other times you're just left shaking at your head at those who are like him. And when people like Peter are nervous, what do? They talk. You ever notice some people when they're nervous, they just talk. You never know what they're going to say. Other people when they're nervous, they just shut down. You will never get a word out of them. But those who are like Peter will talk. They're impulsive. When Judas and his crowd came up, who was the one that grabbed that sword out and ready to go, taking a swipe at poor Malchus? That's Peter, of course. Then the next minute, someone says, "You were with Jesus, weren't you?" "Who, me? No, I don't know him." That goes with this temperament. Something great one minute, something horrible the next minute that has you moaning. Well, how did Jesus deal with him? And how can we deal with our friends who may be like the Apostle Peter today? One thing, Jesus was careful, it seems to me, not to humiliate Peter. He praised him, but he also gave him the loving rebuke. He gave him gentle warnings. Turn to Luke chapter 22. Jesus knew what Peter was about to do. And he tried to give him the warnings that would keep him from doing it. Verses 31 and 32. The Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I've prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. There's a few things there. There's the gentle warning, but then there's an expectation that after he made his big mistake that he would return. I think that's what this type of a temperament needs today. Warnings, gentle rebukes, but optimism that things may turn out well eventually. Matthew 16, you remember after he confessed, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona. One thing that's interesting is the nickname that Jesus gave him. Of course, Peter's name was not Peter, it was Simon. The name Peter is kind of like a nickname. Some have suggested that maybe Jesus did that to make him think of the hardness of a stone, which is what Peter means. Stone, you're going to be hard. That's a pretty good theory. I know that happens sometime. I know we have some baseball fans, and I think this illustration would have to be for older baseball fans. But there was a young pitcher that came up in the 80s named Oral Hershiser. He had good stuff. He's just such a nice guy, you know. He just didn't seem to bear down. And his manager, Tommy Lasorda, gave him a nickname, Bulldog. It didn't seem to go with him at all, his personality. But the idea was to get him to be a little more tenacious. And, of course, Oral Hershiser, one of the better pitchers, and if I remember correctly, in the late 80s and in the 90s. Jesus calling Simon Peter, perhaps to help him to understand the importance of being firmer and tougher. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. And these are some of the texts that we've referred to here, referring to Peter. Well, what happened to Peter? He was transformed. When you see him on the day of Pentecost, his strength and his enthusiasm standing up before those people and preaching them the gospel of Christ. And even more, in my mind, is what we see in Acts chapters 3 and 4. As he has to stand before the Sanhedrin, those same people who had killed Jesus, those same people before whom he said, in the same court, I don't know who Jesus is. And now, we must obey God rather than man. Those who are like Simon Peter today can be transformed. They can deal with those weaknesses. The shallowness, the impulsiveness. They've got to work on it. It's not going to come automatically. It's got to come through prayer. It's going to come through Bible study and working with others. But those strengths that they have, that ability to open, to be open with those who are around them, and to gain their confidence and win their trust, we need them among God's people. I think Barnabas, the son of exhortation, must have had a lot of this quality in him. And, of course, they have a lot of strength in various types of service. If you want someone to make visitors feel at home, get someone with this temperament to go and greet them. And they'll feel like, the visitors will feel happy. I'm going to mention something. I like here the way that the children will open the doors for visitors and greet them. I think I can talk a little bit about that Friday night. But you've got something good going there. But if you want adults, assign them to that type of thing. Assign them to go and visit the sick. They're people, persons. And we need to keep that in mind. And if you feel that this might be your temperament, work in that area to use that gift that God has given you, to be open with others, to gain their confidence and trust. That's something special you can do for the Lord. Well, let's look at Moses. He's the one we're going to call analytical. And there are a whole bunch of others in the Bible who seem to have this analytical temperament. Jacob, Elijah. It almost looks like most of the prophets were this way. Jeremiah, Isaiah, and in the New Testament, of course, Thomas. Those who are like Moses are cautious. They're detail-oriented. Now, they want to check things out. They're happy with a few friends, but the few friends they have will be friends for life. Some of the good qualities. They're loyal. They have no tolerance at all of hypocrisy. Sometimes I think they seek hypocrisy when it's not there. But I guess I'm thinking of some family members. If they see hypocrisy, it just tears them all to pieces. They're deep thinking. They'll see things in the Scriptures that are there, but you did not notice them. They have to be careful, however, with being overly suspicious. Those who are like Moses and analytical observe people a lot and they see a lot they don't like. And sometimes they observe themselves and see a lot in themselves they don't like. And it can become too discouraged about it. They can be untrusting. They can be pessimistic. Oh, everything's awful. Fault-finding and self-centered. These are the weaknesses they have to be concerned about. I want you to look at Moses in Exodus chapter 3. If you have your Bibles, turn there to illustrate what we're talking about. Of course, Exodus 3 is the famous chapter where God appears to Moses in the burning bush and wants to send him to Pharaoh. And yet, as God encourages him to go and stand before Pharaoh, what do we see from the very beginning in Moses? Excuses and lack of confidence. We won't read all of the verses, but I'll refer to them. Who am I? Verse 11. Those who are like Moses tend to exaggerate their own faults. Well, what is your name? Verse 13. Chapter 4, verse 1. Well, it won't do any good anyway. That's a phrase you hear often from those who are like Moses. Chapter 4, verse 10. I'm just not a good public speaker. Well, what's interesting as well in reading Exodus 3 and 4 is to notice God's way of dealing with Moses. Did God give up on Moses the first time Moses started making excuses? Persistently kept after him, persistently overcame his excuses. Didn't throw up his hands, didn't become angry, but was very persistent with them. I think that's the way we can help those who are like Moses today. Sometimes we become frustrated. Just, you're so pessimistic, you're so critical, don't lose your patience. Persist. No, you need to look at the good. God's blessing you. Count your blessings. And over a period of time, they can overcome some of those weaknesses and be some of the deepest and most loyal servants of God that you can know. That's what we need. And as a result of the way that God dealt with Moses, he was such deep loyalty to Jehovah God. He was just the right leader that the Israelites needed at that time. Those who are analytical today need to allow God to transform their lives, just as Moses did. And I think the toughest thing for those who are like Moses is to learn to see the positive. Learn to see the good. Among families, analyticals can see all the flaws, and they start to exaggerate them. The old princess and the pea, that pea under those 24 mattresses just bothers them. And they've got to learn to count the blessings that are around about them. Life in general. They're not happy at work, although they'll stick with it sometimes. Look at the good. And among their brethren, they see weaknesses, especially the hypocrisy that they don't like. Look at the good. And one thing I always try to say is, we want God to look at our good qualities and be patient with us and those that aren't what they should be. Let's be that way with our brethren. And if they work at it and keep working at it, keep reading the Word of God, thinking of ways to be more positive in their outlook, they can become like Moses, deep. I really think that most of our good scholars have this temperament, analytical but loyal. And that's one of the strengths. Analyticals are loyal once you have
you've gained their trust. Now, someone like Peter will be your great friend. And if he's not careful, he'd be you're just his best buddy for 10 minutes. And then he forgets your name. Not so with these people like Moses. They will defend you. They will back you up. And here's where we see some of their strengths in service. With phone calls. Here's the problem. I'm working on my own weakness as far as this is concerned. I've got my agenda down. Here's what I'm going to do. Here. I want to do this. And somebody calls me on the phone and wants to talk 3 hours about some problem that they have. And I'm sitting there, yeah. And I'm really sorry. And analyticals won't be that way. They will sit and talk for hours, heart to heart. They can be your best friends when you need somebody to talk to. If you need something that requires attention to detail, in the secular world, I want all airplane inspectors to be analyticals. They'll catch it if it's wrong. And even among God's people, there are tasks here that require attention to detail. There's your person to do that. There's so much they can do, but we have to work on those weaknesses of our temperament to become the type of servant that Moses was. Well, let's look at one more. Let's look at Abraham, and I also want to look at Eli. He gives some good examples as far as this guy. These are those who we could call the steadies. We have Abraham in the Bible. It looks like Noah may have had this temperament. Samuel and others. Now, these are your easygoing. They're constant. They like their habits. I remember a teacher at Florida, Brother Shrigley, had his habits. Just every day, the coffee at 10:15. Every day after this, just all right down through it. And somebody said, why? He said, if I didn't have the routine, I would never get anything done. And that, I think Brother Shrigley would probably fit in this category. They have a wry sense of humor. You know, these type of people, you'll be talking and they'll just say a little play on word and it's hilarious. Now, they may not even crack a grin when they say it, but it's hilarious. So you may know some people like Abraham or Eli, or you may be one like them. They are efficient, they're witty, they're good diplomats. If you have somebody that they're two people at each other's throats, send somebody like this in there to help them out. They can see both sides of the story, calm the situation down, and work it out. But they've got to be careful with some things. They can be very indecisive. Maybe this is, I don't know, you analyze yourself. Maybe this is one of my stronger temperaments, but when it comes time for me to buy a car, I just cannot make up my mind. I know today some others, I think, with that temperament trying to decide what food they wanted. And it all looks good. I just don't know what to do. Well, sometimes you just have to make a decision. And I know sometimes when I have, I'm talking because I think I got a good dose of this. I have some plan. I'm going to do this with the and it gets upset. Something throws a monkey wrench and that just tears us all to pieces. And here's what we really have to be careful with. Those who are like Abraham, and we're going to show this in his life, like peace and quiet. Now, those who are like Paul like a good argument. And those who are like Peter will get into a lot of arguments. But these like it nice and easy. And sometimes to keep the peace, if we're not careful, we can compromise truths of God's Word. And that is a danger that we need to be careful with. Well, let's look at a few texts to illustrate. And I'm going to talk primarily about Eli, who seemed to have this. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 2. Those who are steadies have to be careful with their children. Because if they're not careful, they can let their children be rebellious, do all kinds of hard things, and they're just sitting there oblivious to it all. Evidently, Eli was that way. Look at verses 22 and 23. Now, Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle, the meeting? Unspeakable action, and yet what is Eli's response? Verse 23. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress." But you go on and you get this kind of mild-mannered, mild rebuke when strong action was needed. I suppose his sons were too old for a spanking. But they needed to be taken away from God's people, strongly rebuked and punished for that type of sin. And yet you just kind of see this easygoing approach. That's the approach, if we're not careful, of those who are like Abraham and Eli. Of course, in chapter 3, verse 13, God told through Samuel that God was going to cut out, judge the house of Eli forever because, let me read it correctly, "For the iniquity which he knows because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them." We can be too easygoing. And if we have this temperament, we better watch it. I don't want to get into this too long. Our time's about up. But that's why sometimes opposites in a marriage make a good combination. Sometimes you may have an easygoing husband or wife. If you have two of them, maybe the kids can get by with murder. But if one is there, we need to punish. We need to, and the other one, maybe to calm the situation down. That's help. That's why we work together as a team, not only in the church, but in the family. We blend temperaments. We blend cultures. And therefore, all of the good qualities that we hope can come to the forefront while we help each other work on those that are not as good. If we're not careful, those who are like Abraham and Eli can be fearful. Why do you think Abraham, on two occasions, said that his wife was a sister? He was afraid. What are some strengths that those people like this have? Diplomacy, we've talked with this. Working with difficult groups of people. Often when you have a large group of people, I've seen this when you have maybe 200 or 300 people organizing the camp or something like that. If you're not careful, those who are like Paul, they'll get everything organized and get everybody going. It's almost like with a whip, and everybody gets offended. They're not careful. If you have somebody like Moses, they just get so upset because they see all their faults and they just get so discouraged. And those who are like Peter are so often disorganized. But those who are like Abraham and Eli can sometimes work well with large groups of people. Well, let's get some applications and conclude. In the kingdom of God, in this local congregation, let's know who we're dealing with. Know their strengths and their weaknesses, just as Jesus did with his apostles, and act accordingly. With someone like Saul of Tarsus, you can rebuke strongly. But with others, perhaps more patience and kindness. And I'm thinking Jude 22 and 23 again. As far as you yourself are concerned, you may have been able to see yourself in this brief analysis of these four people. Think of your weaknesses in particular. Work on them. Pray to God to help you overcome them. Overcompensate a little bit to the other side. I'm thinking right now of a gospel preacher I know who I thought his personality was just tough as nails. And his son told me, "My dad's personality is not that way. My dad is kind of does not like controversy. My dad likes to take it easy." But he realizes that to serve God effectively, he's got to be stronger. He has worked to be as strong as he is. And I think that's an effective understanding of doing what we ought to according to the Word of God. But God can use everyone. It's so easy. And I think this is especially when I see some of those who I say like you just shaking everybody's hands and hugging them and everybody. That's just not my personality. I have to push myself. I push myself to be more of a hugger. I could get into that a little later. When you go to New York City among the Latin culture, you've got to learn to be a hugger. And I learned that in a hurry. It's not my nature to be a hugger. But what I'm saying is, sometimes I felt, I wish I could be more like that person. But I can learn from that person, but realize that maybe I have, with the temperament that God's given me, some strengths in some other areas that He doesn't have. God can use me as I am, as long as I'm careful to work on the weaknesses that I have and be strengthened in every other way. Learn to appreciate those who are different from you. There's some of these temperaments that clash. I think particularly those who are like Simon Peter and those who are like the Apostle Paul just do not understand each other sometimes. What's he smiling so much about? What's the funny? That would be what Paul would say. Well, he's just so serious and on the ball. He doesn't know what life's about. There are some natural clashes here. But God can use us all. Don't look down upon your brother because he may have a different temperament from yours. God needs your service in the kingdom. God has a plan for you. God can use you in a special way that He can use no one else. Let Him do it. Let Him have His way with you and however you are. But God needs you. That sounds funny to say that, but He wants to use you. But really, the big thing is you need God. You need God to make your person reach His potential. You need His salvation. You need what He has to say. If you don't, all these bad qualities will come out in some of the works of the flesh. You'll be lost. You'll have no purpose in life. But if you turn to Him, God can take you however you are and mold you into something that is truly beautiful. Let Him have His way with you. We can help someone tonight to become a Christian, to allow God to begin working in your heart. Let us know. Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." That's the beginning of the journey of transformation that God can make with you. Let us know if we can help you with that or with anything else as we stand and sing.